This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, good afternoon. Now that our guests have arrived, I'll call the meeting to order. It is Wednesday, April 4th, 12:20 p.m., meeting of the Employee Assembly. Are there any late additions to the agenda for today? Jeannie?
If there's time, I can report on the Planning Committee.
Okay. And I'll just, in my report, I'll talk a little bit about elections and where we're at with candidates. Rather than approve minutes, we'll do that afterwards, and we'll just skip right to the business of the day, talking with David and Mary. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having us. Always very, very good to be with you and to listen to you. What's going on? How are you guys? What kind of feedback are you getting about the employee survey? What sort of things are you hearing about, or what are you thinking about? I'd love to know.
Well, anyone want to start? Or all right, I'll start. I've been hearing a lot of feedback just from staff across campus. Really pleased with the results and pleased with kind of the action steps that you guys are looking to work on.
Mm-hmm.
I know from talking with Leslie Morris, who couldn't be here today, that the School of Hotel Admin, and maybe Curtis can jump in on that, they have talked a little bit about the survey in their all-staff meeting, right?
Oh, right. When was that, can I ask?
That was during spring break.
Okay.
So there's some talk about it. Just from speaking about my department in arts and science, I haven't heard anything kind of from above, just kind of from my colleagues talking amongst ourselves about that. And the biggest thing, again, is the climate and the workload pieces.
So we've asked every college and department to hold meetings. And SAS has been announced yesterday to the program directors that she'll concentrate somewhat on a lot on supervisory feedback of the supervisor and putting some things in place so that that's an opportunity that everyone in SAS will be able to do for their supervisors. The way that that is going to take shape hasn't really been decided yet. But that's one of her focus is from the employee survey.
Mary has emphasized this. I don't go to the dean's meetings, but I know she met with the dean and also emphasized it to the VPs. The real question will be that I'd love to get this kind of feedback to know that it's happening. Is it getting to the level that you're hearing about it?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's good that it's beginning a little bit and also explaining.
I would be curious, it is beginning a little bit. I'm in facilities engineering, and it was brought down one level to my supervisor, but it wasn't really clear what your directive was to the dean, and I was wondering if there was.
Mm-hmm. So we've asked every dean and every vice president to hold all staff meetings to share the outcomes that they got. We took the staff survey and we gave the feedback for each college and unit to the deans. We asked them to share that data so that people can see how that you saw the university-wide data. We asked them to share the data as it looked for their dean, for their own colleges and units, and then to just start a discussion about what that means. What more can you? I mean, it's just data. You have to talk about the data to figure out what it means in your unit.
Mary also, what Tanya was referring to, told them about four areas of focus that you guys have seen written about already.
Right.
So she reminded them of what those were.
We're going to start with four things we're going to do across the whole campus. But then there's a whole bunch of other stuff that's specific to units that we'd like people to start to think about and talk about together. So, you know, we're not prescribing everything. We're just hoping people will just start talking together about what it means in each unit. So I've had three meetings in my own division ending last night at about 1 in the morning with our shift, our third shift workers over in Barton. And the libraries had two open meetings. I just came from one this morning. So they're just beginning. Hotels had one. They're just starting.
But did you give them a time frame where they would report back to you?
Mm-hmm. So they're supposed to be doing their meetings this spring.
Yep, she did. And she did it twice, which is going to be, but it'll be interesting to see how it works.
Yeah.
We're going to have one in the president's office. I didn't tell you the chain is organizing. So.
So when you said all staff, Mary, does that mean, you know, the dean's meeting with, say, all of the staff in arts and sciences, or just like their staff, and it should trickle down from there?
Yeah,
or?
I think they're going to have to do it in the way that works the best. So a big college, it would be kind of unwieldy.
Yeah.
Who's going to say anything in a meeting of, you know, 500 people? So I think they'll have to do it in a way that works the best. It's not going to be very useful if nobody says anything. So the point's supposed to be to get people to talk.
Has anybody else heard talk of such a meeting in your area or in your general unit, even if it's not in your facility? So it'd be great to get that feedback as time goes on, Tanya, if it's okay.
In CALS, we have not heard anything yet. I mean, I work with the seniors, so we've had some staff meetings and we've talked about it a little bit. I've also emailed the dean's assistant asking for, there's three CALS members on the EA, if we could meet with her to discuss it and maybe see how we can help initiate anything. Or, so that meeting is scheduled at the beginning of May.
Great.
The email that went to everybody from the president says that these are supposed to be happening, so if you don't see it, you should feel empowered to go ask about how you can help get them going.
Please not to be bashful about that, because we really want it to happen, and apropos your question, want it to happen now, while it's fresh in people's minds, and Mary made these presentations to them, so, you know, help us, that would be great.
I just want to, you know, you can hold meetings as well to gather feedback. The reason we were trying to get the dean and vice presidents to listen themselves. You know, information is good, and getting it to people is good. We're trying to get deans and vice presidents to listen and hear them for themselves about the way people are feeling in their units. But information is information.
Can I just reiterate one quick thing? I know you know this, forgive me for being redundant, but Mary also sent everybody their own stuff, each their own sort of a compilation. So they're getting, they saw the overview for the whole university that Mary and Marin Clarkford presented. And then Mary sent it by unit with Marin. And then Mary met with them to say, I'd like you to, you know, move this to a different level. Made the point that she said in response to your question, that depending on the size of your unit, you would have to do it some other way to make it functional. And then the note went off from me. So we'd like for them not only to look at the written compilations that Marin and Mary did, but also to hear directly from the staff about whatever, maybe something, you know, tangential to the survey.
You all met with Marin?
Oh, is that right? You met with EA? Okay. Good.
Other thoughts about the survey? Any questions about, and our guests too, please feel free to jump in and ask questions or talk about things in your units or things you've heard.
Well, I don't know if this is directly related to the survey, but I think it has a piece to it. One of the suggestions and ideas that I had with the EA was trying next year to meet individually. Not individually, but as a collective whole, inviting some of the deans of each of the colleges as follow-up to what they're doing with their employees. And then my other question kind of ties to that is, I know you sent out an email about towards a new destination, mm-hmm. and the staff component with that. And that's one of the things where I have not heard any follow-up at all.
Yeah.
In terms of what is next with that. I mean, I thought it was a very nice email.
So here's what's, I'll give you my version of it and then Mary can correct it. Mary, Susan, Murphy, Lynette Chappelle Williams, Laura Brown, sort of head up this new university diversity council that has the, in addition to Lynette, has three other professionals, A.T. Miller, Sherry Natero, and Renee Alexander. as content experts, and also Yale from CU Advanced. And so all that we sent out so far was that sort of announcement that there is a new diversity initiative. The group that I mentioned, especially Laura and Lynette, has still been working on refining the paper so it's ready to go out to everybody. The actual thing that was referred to in the because you didn't actually get that paper yet. Yeah. And I should know, Mary, but I don't. I think we're within a couple of weeks or something.
They're finalizing. I would encourage you to invite them to come.
To talk to
you. Have the diversity experts come and talk to you. This is a work in progress.
Right.
The core concepts around it are accountability. And and so there's a lot of time being spent on how are we going to measure accountability, how are we going to measure success, and then how are we going to hold people accountable. So it's taking, I think appropriately, so time to figure out how we're really going to make this.
Who would you invite to this group?
I would invite the experts. I would bring Lynette and AT and Renee. Maybe can't get them all, and Yael, but I would bring them here and have a dialogue with them so you can be fully informed and see how you can participate.
In addition to that, very soon, I don't have an exact date, but the month of April, we're going to put the paper out for everybody to be able to see through the Cornell Chronicle, and you'll be able to download it and read it and put it on the president's website. And that has the details of what Mary and Susan and Laura and Lynette and others came up with as a way to set the goals for accountability, that everybody's responsible for what we're calling compositional diversity, but then you pick from a menu, in addition, not instead of, you pick from a menu of, I think, three other, if I'm not mistaken,
mm-hmm. yeah, there's
things that you pick, and then you're mm-hmm. responsible as a leader to do that. So I need to invite someone.
I've been in a couple meetings
where
the initiative has been rolled out, and I love the idea of accountability. I think that's great, and I really appreciate that disability has been included as an aspect of diversity. I have one question about the approach of, like, the new ideas, though. So you have to come up with some new ideas, and you have to be, you know, accountable to those ideas. So many of the things that people have been working on for a long time are things that have merit, but maybe, and have worked, but maybe have not had the resources that they deserve, did not get the attention that they deserved. And I just sort of wonder if what you think about the new idea approach is sort of like the new thing is the better thing, where, you know, I just wonder about the depth of that approach, the sustainability of that approach, and what it means about deserting things that have already worked but maybe didn't have the resources or attention they deserve.
So I'm not sure that the concept is that it has to be a new idea.
Exactly.
It may be that they have to build on the success of an existing idea. So the concept that we're trying to build on is if it's been working, we want it to work better or we want it to improve. So they can take an existing success. But if we were as diverse as we wanted to be, mm-hmm. and we were doing everything exactly as we'd hoped, then doing the same would be good enough. But what we're trying to say is we need to do better. Mm-hmm. So past practices haven't gotten us where we want to go. So if somebody says, but this practice is really good, then we'd say, do it plus more effort. So it's not that we want to abandon a successful strategy. We just want to maybe ramp it up a little bit.
And then one more just tiny point about that is because we will now be holding people accountable, I'll be accountable to the Board of Trustees and the trustee provosts and VPs and so on to me and down the line. Because of that, even ideas that were working, except for compositional diversity, simple, you know, percentages, we haven't been quantitating all those things. And when we listen to people, including from the employee survey, by the way, climate issues loom huge. And so, just as a rough generalization, which you'll read yourself and see if you agree with this, when you read the paper and see the other parts of the menu that the leaders will choose from, a lot of them are oriented toward climate. So even if you have a terrific recruiting season and you're changing compositional diversity by bringing people in, you may not keep them, the retention that doesn't work, people don't feel comfortable, safe, those kind of issues. And we've tended not to quantify that stuff or hold people accountable, except in a squishy way. You know what I mean? Not something that you could go back. Everything can't be quantifiable exactly, but even if it's qualitative. and you can move it in a direction and somehow measure or assess that direction. That was their idea, which I thought was really a brilliant idea. So it doesn't in any way say that you have to replace or abandon something, but to ramp it up more or amp it up or whatever Boston term you use, plus to quantify it. Amp, I think she said. Amp it up.
So we might, for example, say you want to keep something that you think is really working, but we might want to measure it. Mm-hmm. That might be the only thing you'd add. Might want to figure out how to measure that we think is working.
We'd love to get feedback from the EA if you do choose to have someone come here and talk with you. And when you get the paper in your hands, by as individuals or as an EA.
This is something where we need active help.
Big time.
Where we think we have the framework of a change strategy, but we need help in making it an action plan for a different future. So if that is something that you're interested in, we could actually use active participation in helping us frame this. So get actively involved in it. Have them come, read the materials, take a piece of it, and jump in and get involved with us. You know, and it doesn't, we're not done. This is going to continue. Our goal, we think we've developed a design that will work in our environment, but it's not finished. It needs work for this community to change and grow in the way that we believe we owe the people that come after us.
Oh, are you expecting protests?
It's April.
I wonder what it is.
Well, I don't think they're here for me, so.
You might get those 10,000 miles in 10,000.
You know, my theory on these things is that it's good for me to go to them, not to run away from them. So we'll see.
Okay.
I wonder what that is.
I don't know. You should check the person in charge of the police.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Can I ask just one more question about the, when creating the council, the student council, how did you come up with the participants? Because one of the concerns I know AT, I know Steve Carr, I know Renee, I know Dr. Brown, and I think these are all great people, really much. But one of the concerns I had was I didn't see anybody who looked like me. One, I didn't see an African American male on it. Mm-hmm. I didn't see just somebody under the age of 30.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we just have a totally different perspective to what diversity is. And so one of the concerns, like when I just talk to my peer group, is that are we just doing the same thing again, or creating a notion of diversity that generation wants to see, but is it really going to lead Cornell to this new direction that we're going to with the younger staff coming in?
Yeah, that's a great piece of feedback. That the people that are on that group are there because of their position,
mm-hmm.
not compositionally.
Exactly.
But you need to provide that feedback because compositionally. So what you've just identified has everything to do with the fact that compositionally we're not diverse yet. So we don't represent the world we live in yet. And so when we look at positions, almost any position, we don't look compositionally diverse. So I would encourage you to give that feedback. Almost in any compositional diversity, when you pull together a group of positions, we're not compositionally diverse. So I would encourage you to give that feedback. And that includes from an age standpoint, as well as a racially, ethnically,
sexual orientation,
disability. And it does hinder our ability when we think about recruitment, retention, all sorts of strategies. It really does hinder us. So how we go forward with our strategies, we need to think about that because it will have an effect.
But there's one other thing I want to mention, and that is the idea of having the accountability broadly distributed is that you don't just hold this group of 11 people or 8 people accountable or a chief diversity officer, which is what I had at the University of Iowa years ago. The idea is just the opposite, that it gets out into the real world of the campus and in those units, just like when you were talking about the employee survey, that's where it has to happen, the change in the climate. Those, because, you know, really we don't do things as a university, right, except set these big lofty goals. And the climate is a microclimate, right? It's wherever you're working. And so not only is it a really good idea, but when you see the paper and then when the provosts give their deans and department heads specific goals, that's when the work is really going to start, right? Just, it's not when it's going to end, it's where it's going to start.
Yeah.
Because then it's going to be in those local areas. And we haven't yet figured out exactly, in an organized way, how to engage the people who are working in an area, which is what's going to make the climate good or not good. So this is really important feedback.
So a great example might be, how are the, so the, a set of goals will be developed, you know, a set of initiatives will be developed. How will those be, in the first year will happen, right? There'll be some stress. But then what happens after that if they're not really reaching a diverse, if they're not really helping us really reach a diverse population, then is there going to, can we develop a broader representational group that will help deans and vice presidents be more creative in developing that next round of initiatives? What if I would like to have a focus group or a different group of people help me create my recruitment strategy? What would I do if I turn to Lynette and Divine and I say, you know, I'd like to pull some people. Can you help me do that? Do they have a way to do that? You know, those are the sorts of things that we could use some help with. You know, if Yael is asked by a dean, well, what are some ways I could reach a different population of faculty? Does she have a way to do that? Those are the sorts of things I think we as a community can think differently about than we've done in the past. Those are the sorts of things I think that we need to think together as a community about, not just about hiring, but retention and ourselves as a community and how we think about ourselves as a community.
I think Mary used the word community as such an important word because it's not to be redundant, too redundant, but not just a group that sits literally in this room and sort of makes all these decisions as if they understand all these things, but the four people on that group that are content experts, what I call content experts, a lot of their input was that the climate is a local issue. And so I can't tell you enough what an important point that is. And when you see the paper, maybe you could, I mean, if you have time, read it, think about this point you're making, and send me a note. I'll share it with this group if you're comfortable doing that. That would be great. Mm-hmm. Really helpful.
Are the trustees being held to the same standards as the rest of the
campus? It's amazing that you just asked that. we were just talking about that they allowed me to sit on the board membership committee. And I haven't even had a chance to talk to you about this, Mary. At the last meeting, I asked them about that because there is, you know, we don't control that process, to put it mildly. And but the way they choose the trustees hit on these same issues that you were bringing up. All these dimensions that Mary talked about and what you added as well, including age, have not always been explicitly stated. And I know sometimes I talk a lot about Mary in these sessions, but Mary, years ago when I first came here, asked that the board membership committee for the trustees develop some specific, like a grid or something, where, you know, what are the attributes you're trying to hit? Gender, age, geographic, diversity, blah, blah, blah. And slowly, she doesn't come to that meeting, but slowly through me, I've taken those concepts and asked them to do it. So they do talk about it. But if you look at the way the board looks, 64 plus, what would you say, 20, 30 emeriti that come to the meeting, not only are they very, very largely not diverse in terms of racial or gender diversity, sexual orientation, it's hard for me to know, but geographically and job background, there's, you know, enormous concentration in the finance industry and a few others. And so we're just beginning to tiptoe around that now.
They do talk about it.
They do. They talk about it. And it's interesting. That's a committee where a handful of people, I think there's 10 on that committee, actually make the decision about who is being moved, you know, to go on the board. And obviously one thing in a school like this that they think about is if the person can make a financial contribution at some point. But what was interesting to me was I thought that would be like by far the biggest thing they talk about, but it isn't. It isn't. And some of that is because, honestly, because of Mary's input of thinking along all the dimensions and thinking what you'd like to look like as a board and what we do look like. So, you know, it would be a lie if I said that they don't think about the person's financial status. But lately they brought people in who do not have major financial needs. And then one other thing, which is a little different than what you're bringing up, but I just want to mention it quickly. Mary's also brought up the point of having people on the board who have run organizations as opposed to people who have invested in organizations. You know what I mean? Like a venture capitalist. And that's a different thing. Because if you run an organization, you tend to think about employee issues, you know, this kind of stuff.
There's a kind.
different, you know, I mean, different than if you were in an investment bank and your main thing was picking out winners and investing in those companies, but not actually yourself interacting with employees or students. So I think they're actually getting there to some extent. And there's a new chair of the board. The old chair of the board was terrific. New chair of the board, the younger person. And he thinks about these things and talks about them. So I'm optimistic about that.
I've just got another, just curiosity, what another idea, that's okay.
It's good.
You know, we've been talking a lot about workload and ability to manage it for the staff.
Mm-hmm.
And it always seems that, you know, kind of the people up here are looking at things, but they don't necessarily always know what those of us in the trenches are doing.
Don't necessarily always know. This is diplomacy.
Yes.
You're ready to work for Hillary Clinton. Don't know blank about it is what you were
saying. Okay.
Yeah.
okay, sorry. But has any thought been given to maybe pulling together some groups of administrative assistants in different areas and things like that to sit down and say, okay, what is the work that you're doing? And what is the work that you're sitting there doing every day going, why am I doing this? Because this is redundant or, you know, makes no sense. Or,
do you want to talk about some of the local stuff?
So figuring out how to do that so that the outcome is realigning of work is where we need mm-hmm. to get to. The challenge in doing that is doing it in a way that allows the individuals that are having that conversation to feel safe.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have a lot of work that you feel is really not value added, you have to feel safe in putting that work out there that somebody's not going to come along and go, well, why do we even have you? And in the environment that we're coming out of, that's a really, really scary thing to do. So I'm still trying to figure out how to... I'm convinced that we are completing the last set of reductions, that with the last set that we're going through right now, we just are done. I just don't know, absent like stopping something, how we can continue to do this. But if you're a person in this, that's a big statement, and you're one person.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to figure out the process that provides the safety to an individual that allows them to sit in a group and swap the work around to balance it out. Because there's what the comments showed was a great unevenness of work. So it isn't just that people have work they know they could get rid of. There are under-occupied individuals sitting right next to over-occupied individuals. And that they don't feel safe saying, I'm under-occupied. I could do some of that work. Because in some cases, what I read was, they need to be trained to take the other work on. They could be trained, but they're not trained. And so they don't say anything. So I read about the individual who would like to, you know, take a baseball bat to the computer of the person who's not using their computer because they don't have the skills, so they're angry at their coworker. Here's a coworker sitting over here quaking because they know they're underoccupied. It's just a really sad situation where this is a perfectly good and loyal person who, if we just trained them, could take the other work on. It's sad. So it's about safety and comfort and feeling like we're about at the size we need to be, and if we could redelegate that workout and get people the training they need, we would be okay. I don't know how to make that happen. So the best first step is to get leaders to start talking to people and creating safe environments where folks can start to have these conversations.
You have, am I mistaken, Mary, you have, or your colleagues in the HR division, have begun to work or done some pilot work with a couple different areas on campus. I forgot what they were, but
40 of them right now.
So even though Mary says that she doesn't know how to get there yet, she's doing it. She's beginning the process. And I'm an optimist by nature, but the fact that someone in a high position is thinking about it and actually beginning to do it, of course it's going to be hard to figure things out. But not only is it absolutely true that we just can't cut anymore, but we don't have to cut anymore. And those curves, just take 1 second, I promise. I won't go on and on and on, I promise. When we were, if you look at the graph of dollars versus years, you know, when you have one, say black is revenue, increases expense, and in a nonprofit, you know, you want it to be about the same, not trying to make a big profit, but you don't want to begin to go in the red. And when the recession hit and the endowment went down and a lot of state funding and stuff like that, the revenue part started to go down, but the expense part was still going up somewhat, and there was this big difference of $150 million. And as of the projected, the budget that's going to start in July, which is all set, it's out everywhere, the revenue has come up since that year, and the expenses, as you know, have come down a lot, and those curves are going to touch again in the coming year. So those are the two factors. We can't cut anymore. And there isn't a deficit, predictable deficit anymore after the year that just what Mary said. Mm-hmm. And so now is the perfect time to have these conversations because, just to repeat what Mary said, this is about the size we're going to be, both, you know, students, staff, the faculty was down, it's coming back up again. It's not going to be more than it was before. And so we're sort of in an equilibrium, even if it's an uncomfortable equilibrium. So it's a great time to do this stuff.
So if you can help us think about ways to hold those conversations, questions that could be asked, ways we can do this that don't make people feel uncomfortable, think about that and talk about it, because the work rebalancing came through loud and clear in the staff survey comments in the 1739. I was saying 1741, but it must have just felt that way.
Is there a question?
Those 40 groups that you've met with, are you talking about the workload balancing? Is this specifically the last time we met with you? You talked about training the managers to think differently. Is that the same thing?
So it's a very structured way of working down to job design. It goes from priorities to, so the whole team works on this. The whole team. So it's a work unit described however the work unit is described. But it includes the leadership and everyone in the work team. It starts with the priorities of the work, and it works all the way down to the definitions of the jobs, and that's how come you end up rebalancing the work, because in the end all the jobs are redesigned.
Mary, can you just really briefly talk about what type of work are you doing about job description? Because I just know for me, example, this is the first year that I looked at my job description, and it does not. And I was like, wow, I wish I did have this job. And I mean, and I, And I did have a conversation with my HR rep about it, and it was kind of like, well, everybody's job description needs to be. And then if that conversation were to occur, how would things then look in terms of like position enhancement,
right,
in terms of salary? Are people really doing equitable work? Because I thought that was an interesting approach to go about. Like, am I doing what's laid out in my job description? And is that 5% other duties that's assigned really 5%?
So the, you know, this is one of those moments where, first of all, physician heal thyself, right? So HR itself went, wow, man, we're really bad at this in our own division. So before I sound like all, you know, superior here, we didn't do a very good job on this in our own division. But in the performance dialogue process that people snarl about, every year you're supposed to look at your performance, your position description, and people go, oh, God, I hate that part of the process. And this is why you're supposed to spend some time in your performance dialogue looking at your PD, and nobody, including me, does a good job of that. In the 1739, it was astonishing how many people said their position descriptions bore no resemblance to what they were doing now. Astonishing. So people's jobs have changed radically over the last 3 years, and I would say you are in the majority to say that your job is not what it was written to be, and we really need to get at that issue. We need to get the jobs written to reflect what people are doing, look at the banding, get them banded, even if we say, right now we can't pay you what you should be paid. I think people would rather know where they should be being paid and get a plan to get themselves there. I think people would respect that more than to look at a job that bears no resemblance to what they're doing and look like they're being paid appropriately. I think, at least in my division, people would rather see a glide path that takes them a few years to get there and incremental approaches to get there and see where their jobs should be banded and get the title that they should have.
And there's one more little angle on this, because I'm going through the same thing now doing my evaluations of the VPs that I do every year, and that is, how do you decide if a person is doing what you think they ought to be doing? So I have a list of goals for every person that we negotiate together and agree on, but if you don't go back to the job description, then you don't know whether those goals bear a resemblance to, you know, those things. So what's the template against which you're measuring?
I think this is one of those places where we rush through this because everybody's so busy.
Just want to get done with it.
And so we rush through getting our goals set up. We rush through our position descriptions. We rush through all this stuff, and, you know, just to get through the work. And then we mean to go back, and we don't go back. And we just need to give ourselves enough time. You know, it's time well spent on ourselves, and we just don't do it. So this is one of the things I'm talking to HR about, because HR needs to caretake this, make sure people are, their job descriptions are, I mean, ultimately each of us has to draft our job descriptions. We know what we're doing, but if HR doesn't make sure that's happening, it won't get done, and that has to occur. And then the banding has to be done, and the plans have to be put in. Otherwise, how can you put your, I don't know how you can put your priorities together if your job description isn't appropriate.
And this is somehow, despite how overwhelmed everybody is, I think it's a fair word, we have to somehow do it in the next period of time, whatever that period of time is, because the curve's touched, because we're at the size, because we're talking about diversity, we're talking about all these things, and you have to sort of, what am I trying to say? Sort of codify what's happening,
because
make reality match. Now is the time to somehow do it as a family.
I'm glad to hear you saying that, because I've rewritten two job descriptions this year, and I've passed them off to HR, and they're such reluctant to change the job title or to change the person's job description when I'm the person who's working with that person, and I know what they're doing is not.
Well, you know, you need to, then people need to let me know when that happens, because That we don't help ourselves to ground to reality. And I'll tell you, Cappy, that's the only way the work that can get ended gets ended. Because if you were an individual whose job still has things you know could end in it, and no one will write the job to the job you're doing, you're not going to end the other work. I wouldn't.
Right.
So
that's how you know.
Because that's all you're being told you're doing when you know you're not doing it.
Right.
So the way that the work we know we can end gets ended is by accurately reflecting what you're actually doing. And we're going to need to make this turn. So when you're reaching, you know, when you're reaching a point of resistance, I just need to know. It's not intentional. I will tell you, at the risk of sounding defensive, HR is overwhelmed. We are, as a division, we are overwhelmed. We're much smaller than we were, and the amount of work we're being asked to do is really mind-boggling. And so I don't believe it's intended because we don't want to do this. It's just breathtaking what we're trying to get accomplished. And so, but if it feels like you're hitting a wall, just tell me and I'll help move it along. Because the whole institution is at a precipice right now, sort of an inflection point, that we have to normalize. And you normalize by getting the work redefined. And you redefine the work by redesigning the job.
And if we want our employees to feel valued, we have to recognize what they're doing.
Right.
And when we talk about culture, it starts there.
That's right.
One thing I have to sound of, just a slight note of difference, though, we purposely, to bring that expense curve down, we purposely, like, really, really squeezed out the administration, I mean, big time.
Mm-hmm.
That from a minor, like I eliminated two vice presidencies with Mary's help and so on, and all through these vice presidential offices, especially, but to be fair, not only in HR, it was shrunk, in order to put the money out in the units, to be honest with you, where some of you work, some yes and some no, depends on where you work. And so I'm a tiny bit defensive about my colleagues in HR because they have a sort of a double whammy, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're smaller, and there's nobody busier at a time of workforce reductions than HR. And so just be a little bit patient. The leader wants to do it, and so on. I know you are being patient, but I'm defensive because I think it's a very hard part of the unit, you know what I mean, to be working in right now, that these things are actually happening. And then we would like to know when you run into a wall, but just to be patient because it's hard. It's really.
But we heard a lot of this, Kathy. What you're saying came through everywhere,
right.
Everywhere. So it's not, and we've talked about it in HR. I think what they're hearing from their leadership is there's no money. And so they're holding on because they think they're not going to get supported.
Yeah.
And what I'm trying to say is, even if you can't pay for it, you have to get the job appropriately written and banded. Otherwise, it's not the job they're doing. It's so the person has no idea what you want them to do. And so if you have to sequentially move to reality. And so I would rather be honest with someone and say, I can't pay you the way it should be paid, but this is the job. This reflects your reality.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that I'm going to have to take a while to get to the right pay reflects my reality. We're all grown up. People know what we've been through.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they will be just fine with that. And maybe not just fine. Maybe that's the wrong word. I think that they would rather be treated with respect.
That's right.
And that's a respectful answer.
Yeah.
And so we're just trying to work ourselves through that. So what you have said is reflected in what I read.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to work the HR people through it.
Do you think, just really quickly, that might be a fifth bullet for the university, is to, one of the missions is make sure people's job descriptions are accurate?
Well, it's part of that.
It's actually in the workload one.
Yeah.
So when you go back and read that one on workload, it actually talks about the job description.
The workload of alignment. It's in that one.
If you read that one that talks about workload realignment, it talks about getting the job descriptions aligned.
Okay.
You should read this stuff every day. It's wonderful.
It's like, on my list of
the novel. I got a couple of pieces of feedback back about brevity.
We were thinking of having, making the central administration a new reality show, but then we figured out nobody would watch it, so sort of a comedy.
Once you're an undercover boss.
You know, they asked me to be on that, and I was advised not to do it.
I actually went to Barton Hall last night at midnight, and that's if you've never been to Barton Hall at midnight, kind of like Undercover Boss. There's like critters roaming around in that building.
The other thing is, if you sometime if you haven't stayed in a dorm in years. I know I'm looking at you because you're so old, but I mean, that's really, it's something to see what dorms are like at 1 in the morning. It's different.
Those are messed up critters.
Well, it is.
There are critters.
Kind of critters. Big time. At least in Donlin, there's critters.
Anything else? Because I think we're at time. We're actually over time.
I really appreciate this time with you in a big way. I really do.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Can I offer... I'm an outsider here.
No, please.
Coming in. does HR still have the supervisor training thing they used to have? Because I took that at one point, and that was very helpful in trying to speak to people and also trying to, you know, you were talking about the one person who's sitting by the other one wanting to club their computer. That helped me a whole lot to know how to talk to people in a better way. To find out who is really feeling overworked and stressed and who's feeling like, I could do more if you would just ask me, but I don't know how to ask that person. That course helped me a lot. Just in those kind of things, just resolving issues in my small little group of sometimes our whole group is maybe 13 people. And it helped.
So we do. We have a leadership academy and a management academy that we make a big difference, I think, in people's awareness of how to work together in both of those programs. Leadership Academy actually begins with people who manage work, not people, because leaders, we all lead in some way. But I have to tell you, after reading 1,739 comments, we still have quite a ways to go in terms of those who lead others. So I think we make a difference with those programs. I'm not sure if the people that were being referred to in some of the comments haven't gone, or maybe we need refresher programs, or whether it's the impact of stress. I can't tell. Some of the comments referred to faculty, but not all, or I would even say not most. So I don't know what to say about that. It was
I just wanted to throw that out there. Is that was something that really aided me in dealing with the people that I work with and knowing how to speak to them in a nice and corrective way if I needed to correct, but also in a way to say, wow, I really appreciate what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because they need to hear that just as much as, wow, something's wrong.
Yeah.
I think it's very useful feedback because the survey wasn't designed to draw up this kind of a comment.
Yeah.
I think it's helpful.
You know, I know that we hear a lot of positive comments when after people go
to them.
I know we've had about 2,000, maybe a little bit more than that, of current staff go through some form of supervisory or leadership programming. So that leaves, you know, a fair number of people who haven't. So maybe we need to try to set that up.
That's another big strain on you all.
We don't have a big group that's able. We do train the trainers, so we have non-HR people training in that area, but. Yeah, we can only do about 15 at a time. Yeah,
please forgive me, I gotta go look. But it's wonderful to be with you.
Are you planning on having another incredibly
Thanks,
what you took was just a picture in time. You're gonna want
So now that we've done the baseline, they'll be done on a regular basis, probably every 2 to 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, they'll be done and we'll monitor progress. And we'll probably add a couple questions, but you'll see a repeat of the key questions so you can see how we're doing. Absolutely.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
you, guys. Yeah. Good conversation.
I think that's one of the most productive conversations.
I like that.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
That was a good format.
Mm-hmm.
Good job.
Did you know the questions beforehand?
I wrote to him and I said we wanted to do more of a conversation rather than a question and answer session, and here are the themes we want to talk about. And I put, you know, basically the survey, the new destination. Yeah. And something else that we touched on. Oh, and the layoffs, which Mary touched on last time. And so, yeah, but it went well.
As far as those employee job descriptions, a lot of the responsibility rests on the employee, and they have to feel valued enough in order to push forward.
Mm-hmm.
But it also is so beneficial for the supervisor, because if that person was to leave and you had to post that job and they had no idea of what you were actually doing, how are you going to recruit this, you know, the person who could fill those shoes?
Exactly. Yeah, I think that there's a lot around that, and one of the things I was actually thinking about is, you know, when you do your performance evaluation, there's the question of you reviewed your performance description, but when you're sitting in that situation with your supervisor and they check yes, but you haven't reviewed it, do you feel safe in saying, I'm not signing this because we didn't really do that? So is there some mechanism that you're not signing off on that with the supervisor, but maybe that's a random sample survey with HR that they just send out a random email that says, have you done your performance evaluation this year and have you reviewed your job description? And you respond back and they can kind of look and see where those things may not be happening and focus that way.
And who determines when these things come around? Because it always seems to be this time of the year a little early. And I don't know about everybody else, but the end of March and April for me is crazy. And to try and get this added into that is really, really difficult.
Yeah. Linda, jump in if I'm incorrect, but it's usually done around the time when they're deciding on sick,
mm-hmm.
which happens right around now.
Mm-hmm.
Though I can say, you know, for myself, our department does ours in the summer. Now, whether they do them after July 1st and that's considered that review for that year kind of thing.
And I try and do mine during the winter break, so it's quieter. A better time
mm-hmm.
for us.
So it's sort of by unit?
Yeah, units kind of decision. But that may be something that you can talk with your supervisor about to say, you know, this always happens at a really bad time, and could we do it? You know, even if you were to say do it again in 6 months, even though it's not the full year, 6 months, so that you have it in that current fiscal year.
I think that the one key part of this, though, is that getting into a climate where the managers and supervisors feel like they now, again, have some wiggle room or some way to work on getting somebody an upgraded position. And what I hear back from people is that, yeah, HR didn't approve it, HR didn't approve it, HR didn't approve it. So I'm glad that you brought up that about the HR, because I think it's almost like a vicious cycle. Like, that's what I'm feeling and hearing in my department, though. Is that we know people's descriptions aren't correct. And we know people have been doing a certain position for over 2 years now and haven't even been named that that's their new title. But all I keep hearing is that HR isn't going to approve anything. And I think that needs to come.
Well, and I think what Mary's saying is that they should be approving it and banding it appropriately,
right.
But whether they can give someone the compensation for that pay band is a whole different story.
It was a real battle to get HR to change mine. I was operating for 10 years on a one that hadn't been changed, and the job had totally evolved into something else.
And I think there's probably very few people on campus right now whose job descriptions are accurate for what they were 3 years ago, because
mm-hmm.
everyone's job has just changed
mm-hmm.
so much.
Surprisingly, mine is right.
Yeah, this is pretty easy.
But mine was just reclassified mm-hmm. and everything within the last year.
Yeah.
And it took forever.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite a process.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think staff is noticing it more because there's so much more work and stress, and people's jobs have changed so much where, I don't know, I know my job description has been the same one for the past 10 years, and it's tweaked a little bit here and there, you know, changed a little bit, but the past 3 years it's completely changed that it doesn't even represent anymore the current job. So. Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts, feedback on the...
I think the idea of having the diversity team, as I mentioned, mm-hmm. having yeah. that minimum come in is a really good idea because I think she can bring it more to life.
So, since you work in the office...
Yeah, she's going to be out of town and not really accessible until the 18th of the month.
Okay.
So, I can definitely ask her when she comes back mm-hmm. in town. I think she'd be very interested to come. Okay.
Yeah, and at the public safety meeting, Lynette was there and presented, and I think it was a really good timing. We could tie into some of what she's working on right now with that.
The Title IX?
Yeah.
Well, okay, now that we have up to one, I just want to see if we have enough people to approve minutes.
I don't think we do.
Six, seven, eight, nine. We've got nine people, so we can approve. We can approve minutes.
I move that we approve the minutes.
Yeah, there was one.
Right, RE 9, because we have 16 people, so 9 is enough to present it. We have 9 people here.
Yeah.
That's more than half. Yeah.
More than half.
I thought it was half. I wasn't sure if it was 2/3.
Okay. Just one quick change. Section 5 committee report, the personnel committee. I didn't follow up with Lauren. I can just ask what we need to do next.
Okay.
So
that's all I
asked.
Yeah, I might
have spoken to Lauren.
So Nicole, I will ask.
And we're actually scheduled to do that.
Or what?
So
I
was present and not
absent. Okay. I fixed it. I figured that was fixed. And so what do you want us to say? That Linda Cole Howell asked what the next step was?
Right. And Mary had suggested. I think I had asked you.
Right.
That was Mary. I said, what do you need to do?
Right. And, right. And so you could say, Linda Cole Howell asked what the next step was for policy change.
Yeah.
And I said that Mary suggested they follow up with Lauren Jacoby.
Okay.
Yeah,
just didn't want to make it sound like he had already done it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I have something to say before we approve the minutes. Mm-hmm. I was present at the Forum on Physical Sciences meeting and a Safe Education Committee. I was not there at the meeting. I don't know.
It says where that you weren't at the meeting. So here underneath a committee.
Committee reports.
So we didn't plan to have
I don't think we had a committee report. We were supposed to have at the last meeting we were supposed to have communications committee report, but Leslie was not here. I don't think we were supposed to report on education, so that might have just been
that's not approved yet.
Because we didn't have any, and I don't even think that was necessarily a committee report, but more just a question when we were in committee reports, but that's fine.
Okay.
Because I don't think we ended up with any committee reports, because our two reports were missing, our two reports were missing.
Yeah, I was supposed to get one.
Yeah, you and Leslie.
All right.
Yeah, that was it.
Okay. Anything else? Does someone want to make a motion to approve with the correction?
Correction. Yeah. Nice
second. Okay, Linda, second. All in favor? Great, thank you. Okay, moving right along, I'll just really quickly say that as far as onboarding update, I did contact Judy Small, and she... I haven't heard back from her yet, just asking if we can put our brochures in the onboarding center. And I just put a note in there saying if there's any benefit that she can see for the EA being involved in any process or whatever to let me know so that we can, you know, it might be nice if they have new employees come in that we maybe can, you know, send an email or follow up with a phone call from someone on the EA just saying, you know, welcome to Cornell. We're so happy to have you as part of our community. And... you know, where the employee assembly, and if you have any questions or want to get involved, kind of thing. So that's all I have on that. And then I'll just quickly speak to upcoming elections. So we have 9 vacant positions. We have 9 people running, which is excellent.
Wonderful.
Yeah. I believe Amy said, 5 exempt staff and 4 non-exempt staff. Is that what you correct? But we have 5 non-exempt slots and 4 exempt slots or something like that.
It's not exactly the perfect.
Not exactly the perfect scenario. But we may end up needing to decide either that we slot someone incorrectly or we leave the seat vacant in case someone who wants to fill, but we can figure that out once we get through the election process. So that is all I have on that. Les, do you want to talk about the Faculty Senate?
Yeah. So the Faculty Senate meeting on the 14th of March was interesting. There were a couple of business items that are just FYI. There was a proposal to cancel classes on the 27th of April 2015. Forward-thinking folks, but it's just been with Centennial. And so that was passed. So from 8 a.m. to 1:10 p.m. on that Monday, there will not be classes so that we can celebrate success with Centennial. They're looking at a proposal to change the academic grievance procedures. That was all they said, pretty much, was we're working on this. They're not in a position yet to bring a resolution to the body. But that's just so that you know that that's one of the things they're thinking about. And their process for selecting the dean of the faculty is really interesting, and I thought I would just tell you about it. The dean has been selected now. But there were 2 candidates. I can't remember whether they were nominated or self-nominated or both. I don't remember how that works. But each of them gave a 5-minute presentation about why they wanted to be dean of the faculty, and then there was time for Q&A. So it was kind of a nice way for the body to get to know those 2 folks. And then they had an online election. So Joseph Burns from Mechanical and Aerospace Engineering was selected. But the interesting part of the meeting was at the end. I don't know whether you've heard rumblings about the concerns about the relationship that we have with the Technion Israel school. The Students for Justice in Palestine are very upset about our having selected that school as our partner. I use that word intentionally in quotes because it's not really a partnership. Because they claim that that institution has committed human rights violations. In addition, the Faculty Senate was not consulted on the decision, and so some members of the Faculty Senate are pretty upset, not about the decision, but about the fact that they weren't consulted. Some of them are also upset about the decision. The students consider the partnership wrong, that it creates an atmosphere of intolerance here for those speaking out, that there is an atmosphere of intolerance here for those speaking out against Technion, and they requested a stay of the decision to sign the contract. So apparently the contract hasn't been signed. And then a counter opinion was shared by a faculty member named Yuval Grossman. He's in physics and he's an Israeli citizen. And he was talking about how wonderful it is that we have this relationship. But it was very interesting. They're an opinionated group when they get a spark. And so it was interesting to hear the concerns. It wasn't the first time. It has come up in every Faculty Senate meeting this year. Or since December, and it just got more heated at the most recent meeting. So there's a meeting next week, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But Kent Fox has been meeting with the students, and their presentation was very mature. They had a document that they had written, and I think the student was nervous, and so he was very prepared. The faculty member was not. He was very emotional and very all over the place. So it was really interesting to see the contrast between those 2 presentations, too.
Let's have a quick question.
Yeah.
The other day when I was looking on Cornellcast, what we put up there, I thought I saw Faculty Senate on Cornellcast. Do they record those now?
They don't. No.
Yeah, it was just Monday. I saw it said Faculty Senate as the thing. I didn't click it open. I was like, are they recording their meetings now? And
yeah.
On Cornell Cast?
No.
I'm going to have to go back up and click on what it is to see what it is.
It may have been a particular presentation.
Oh, maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So, Chip, you want to talk about the public safety meeting?
I'll keep it really short since we're short on time. The main take back was stay out of the water. it is, I don't know if anybody saw the article about how much the university is spending on gorge safety, but it certainly is very top of the agenda, one of the top agenda items. They're talking also about there is a resolution going to the university assembly now, asking to put it in the student code that they would be in violation. Student would be in violation if they were found swimming in the gorge.
Hmm.
Apparently, it's a local code. You're not supposed to be swimming in the gorge, but Cornell Police would like to have it added to the student code. So I think that's all really good stuff. It's mm-hmm. very important.
They might have to remove that.
that's
I know
Lake.
It's CB Lake, but you're not supposed to swim in there either.
No.
I know.
I mentioned briefly that Lynette did a presentation on the Title IX. And then also there's a new website that's being launched called SHAPE, which is Sexual Harassment. But in any case, I'm sure there'll be information coming out soon about that.
There's an article in today's paper about the Title IX stuff that is worth reading to help give some context to what's happening.
And then the last part was in regards to the fraternity and sororities and kind of cracking down on how much partying can happen there on campus. The Cornell Police is now partnering up during the springtime with the Ithaca Police in some patrols in the College Town area on weekends. I thought that was very good. The message there is that even if you're living off campus, you're still a Cornell student and you're representing Cornell. So I thought that was a good time. Good thing.
Okay,
that's it.
Jean, you want to talk about planning committee?
Yeah, I'll go fast. Amy, I was sat next to you at the meeting last time, so I was there.
I fixed that before I printed it out.
At the campus planning committee meeting, there was a presentation from Jim Cassa and Paul Streeter about the vet school, an expansion of space up there, and how they might best do that and still keep green space, focus mostly on the end view at Tower Road, and update the classrooms and lecture spaces so that they can increase the student population per class, because there's a growing need for vets, and that is a big push to do that. So there's a presentation on that and a little general discussion about goods and bads and some poisonous plant garden and don't touch that. Touch your garden.
Especially the poisonous ones.
And then there was another presentation by the planning department on the Tower Road streetscape, and that was kind of interesting. It's farther end of Tower Road, about where the parking is near the lower field, and then there's that strip of parking on the south side of Tower Road.
Mm-hmm.
There's a they gave a presentation on a effort to create that as more pedestrian area and take out that strip of parking that's directly on Tower Road, leaving the lower one and moving those spots into the garage at Martha Vann, and to develop over time more of a pedestrian plaza that connects the campus,
mm-hmm.
north and south, or east and west.
Mm-hmm.
Great, thank you. Our last piece of business is Amy sent you all a proposed resolution for term limits. I would suggest, in the interest that we only have a minute and a half-ish or so left, that, and we don't even have enough people to really have a good discussion about it, that just take a look at it, and if you have any tweaks to it that
let me know when I can make the adjustments, and then we'll bring it back to our next EA meeting and visit it when there's more folks here. I don't know if anybody had any immediate reactions or whatever, or changes to it, but rather than start a discussion that we would not really have time to do. So, anything open forum in the last minute? I want to thank our guests for coming. Yeah. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So,
I move it to adjourn.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Great. Thank you, guys.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.